Welcome to CBA's ABCs of Bow Hunting.
We are here with another CBA's ABCs of Bow Hunting, and we are at the beautiful Highlands Ranch Backcountry Archery Range. And I am joined by a fellow new CBA member, Carmen Robinson. Carmen, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
I'm happy that you're here. We were saying right before the podcast that we both joined the CBA this year, so it's nice to meet somebody else that kind of found this on their own and is interested in it for their own reasons. And we're going to do the 3D shoot tonight, so we figured might as well get a little recording in.
Absolutely. Very excited to do the shoot, and yeah, new to it all, new to archering in general, not just the CBA, so excited to see what there is out there and what everything's got to offer.
That's awesome. Well, you don't have to give us your full history, but if you give us maybe a little background about like you and how you got to Colorado, and then maybe we'll talk about how you got into archery and what makes you interested in it. I'd love to hear some of that.
Okay, so I was actually born and raised in Denver. Grew up here through high school, went to undergrad in Colorado Springs at Colorado College. Moved away, went to a number of different places for a while, moved back to Colorado the end of 2019. And all my family's still here, so that was probably the biggest impetus coming back.
Yeah.
But I decided when I got back that I was going to pick up all the things that Colorado is known for.
Nice.
All the outdoor things, the camping, the hiking, the hunting, the not quite skiing. I'm not.
We don't need all of it.
Not all of it just yet. But yeah, decided I was going to start picking up everything, and met a pair of brothers actually that have been archery hunting for years. Just lucked out meeting them, and they turned me onto it, and I bought my first bow this past March.
Nice.
And looking forward to my first archery elk hunt this fall.
Man, that is so exciting. It's so cool to be at the beginning of something that can be like a lifelong journey. I find in my own world, I'm very drawn to things that don't have like an end point to them. Hunting is one of those. Archery is one of those. All the Colorado things are kind of those, whether it's skiing or like same thing. I don't need to be jumping down the fly fishing rabbit hole or the whitewater rafting rabbit hole.
Right.
I know it's there for me, and I'm sure at some point in the next X amount of years, I'll get curious about it. But there is something about these pursuits, and especially like a hunting pursuit, that you do need to be able to dedicate like the time and the effort and the interest to get to a level of proficiency where you feel confident going
absolutely
in the woods.
Absolutely. I found, again, with the move coming back, that I'm at a place in life where I can, develop or, dedicate some extra time to pursuing some of the things that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So far, up to this point in life, I've been, obviously in school through all of your primary and secondary years, went straight into undergrad, went to grad school, then got, some professional degrees as well. So I felt like I was in school from birth till probably 2018 when I finally, got my master's in nursing.
So, wow.
Now's the time to enjoy the fruits of all of my hard work and kind of relax and live some. So
yeah,
it's been great.
It is interesting. I was just telling a friend. So before I moved to Colorado, I went to South America for 3 months. And about week 7 or week 8, I just started feeling so guilty about like not having obligations. And I had to stop and I'd be like, you've been in school since you were 6 years old. You've been working since you were 14 years old. Like, you take some time off. It's okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I definitely can feel some of that the same. I've got a 15-year-old son, so
yeah.
A large portion of all the time I was in school, I was also, a single mom doing all of those things and, keeping him involved in all of his activities. He's finally in high school now and able to kind of start branching out on his own. He's got his own friend groups. He's got his own sports, his own activities. And
yeah.
So now it's time for me to get some of my own interests and hobbies going.
I think that's awesome. I've also found, just to kind of relate on that, not that I have a 15-year-old son, but that I am a little brother. My brother's 6 years older than me, and I found my whole life I was just doing what he did. I played baseball because he played baseball. I played drums because he played drums, and I do like those things, but it's the things that I found on my own, archery and snowboarding and surfing and spearfishing, that I'm like really drawn towards. And I think part of that's because I stumbled into it. My own curiosities kind of led me down the path of deeper knowledge and deeper exploration, and it's it's nice to be at a place in life where not only you have the time to do it, but also, like, this stuff ain't cheap, you
know? The resources, right. Absolutely.
And that's a barrier to entry that I'm very curious about with, like, new hunters or just new archers is, like, man, to even go spend $200 or $300 on something you might not know you want to do is a big ask.
That could be a car payment or, you know, a grocery bill for a month. For
yeah. And yeah. then now, you know, buying bows that are $2,000, like, it can go so far down. And then the place we're at tonight, we're just shooting as, like, a day pass, but you can get an annual membership, and there's these private archery clubs all over Colorado, which, one, I think is awesome, but two, I'm like, oh, this is kind of like a different version of golf.
Right.
You said you came from D.C.?
I was in Atlanta for the past 10 years.
Now, how was the access to nature from Atlanta?
You know, it wasn't really a priority for me in Atlanta. Hadn't really been a priority since until I moved back in 2019. But I did do some trail running out there. It's very, you know, green and lush out there. So there's definitely opportunities out there, just not any opportunities that I took advantage of.
Yeah.
It was really coming back to Colorado that prompted all of that serious interest.
It's also almost you're drawn to do it out here in New York. There's tons of water and ocean, and you could go upstate or you go to Philly or Jersey or wherever, but here, like, there's not a day that I'm not inspired by the mountains, just
right
on
something
a drive
outdoor
or,
absolutely. So growing up here, it was never a priority for me, for my family, for anyone. It just wasn't something that we did for, you know, for a number of reasons, I'm sure. But, you know, our day-to-day life, our upbringing was survival. We worked to live, you know, we worked to survive. And so, you know, being able to get to a point in life where it's like, I've accomplished so much and now I can enjoy it. I can breathe. I can spend a couple $100 on whatever gear, and I can go explore these new things where I didn't really have the opportunity to do that for a number of reasons before.
Yeah.
Has really been great. And I think it's interesting that you bring up the barriers, because there are so many of them. I think specifically of me as a 6-foot black woman, there's not very many of us out here, especially in the archery world,
but
in lots of outdoors things in general, we're very underrepresented.
Yeah.
And so that's never been a deterrent for me to do anything new. I mean, if I'm interested, then I'm going to go ahead and pursue it. But it's definitely a barrier to a lot of people of color that I have encountered and had conversations with.
I'm curious if you could speak to that a little more. So there's a woman, and I'm forgetting her name, but she was on Steve Rinella's podcast, Meat Eater, and her company is called Afro Outdoors.
Yes.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yes, Tynesha.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll link to it in the show notes of this. But I thought it was so interesting how I was like, I was always drawn towards this stuff. And so I never really felt the need to be invited to do it. So I was just, my own curiosities brought me into it. But I could totally see, especially, like, I'm from Long Island and then living in New York City, like a lot of the inner city kids, it's like your life is concrete jungle. Your playgrounds
Absolutely.
Are concrete. You're not, your water is a swimming pool. So the idea of approaching nature can be so intimidating.
Absolutely. That's a great word for it.
So just the idea of, I'm curious as to, one, what not makes you, like, not worried about pursuing it, but what you think could be, you said before we started recording that your kids are going camping this weekend.
Yes.
And, like, giving them that bit of exposure to that lifestyle out here. I'm curious what you think would be helpful for folk, whether they're city folk or country folk, but just to get into nature more and kind of access, not that you speak for everybody, but just in your own experience.
Well, first of all, I love that you just said, not that I speak for everyone, because I'm definitely not a spokesperson. I just happen to be here today and interested. But it's things like what Outdoor Afro is doing, you know, providing that opportunity for people who aren't generally accustomed or don't have the opportunities to be invited. It's that invitation that is really key. And then meeting those populations where they are, I think, plays a huge part into it as well. Especially when it's things that you're not used to, that you don't see people that look like you doing it. And one thing that I've found incredibly discouraging is, you know, people of color, our own sentiments, at least in my experience, where we have taken on that statement that, oh, we don't do that.
Right. Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Black people don't camp. Black people don't ski. Black people don't do. I mean, that is so heartbreaking to me because I've wanted to do all of those things.
Yeah.
And so when we are presented with opportunities to see people like us doing those things and inviting us to those things, I think, you know, and being involved in podcasts like this with the CBA or even like with Meat Eater, the more exposure I think those communities have to us actually doing it will definitely play a huge part.
I think that's huge. And I think that we underestimate the value of seeing like people doing the stuff we do, whether it's like if your childhood doctor was of a certain ethnicity or sex or what have you, just realizing that it's a possibility.
Absolutely.
I mean, like I was in the University of Maryland when Barack Obama was running for president. I went to his inauguration. I saw it happen. And it's this like huge, momentous event. There's 2 million people on the National Mall when he got inaugurated, and realizing that there were little kids, you know, maybe they were 4 or 5 or 6, who in high school, he was their president for all of high school, right. And it was just normal. And that's just like a super subtle permission granting of like, there is no ceiling here anymore. Now, there's still obstacles. There's a ton of obstacles. But just the idea of, it's like the 4 minute mile. The second one person broke the 4 minute mile, other people started breaking the 4 minute mile, because it's doable. It's possible. So I do think that's one thing, is that there's probably people who participate but are quiet about it, whether they're ashamed or they don't feel accepted or they don't feel like there's community. I'm in a different community that's nothing to do with archery. It's acro yoga. Which is like partner acrobatics. If people have no clue what I'm talking about, it's like Cirque du Soleil, when gymnasts are like climbing on each other and stuff. And I find in those communities, people can be very intimidated because they want to be invited to participate. And being slightly extroverted really helps, because if you're not shy to introduce yourself,
absolutely,
you're not shy to say hello. And that's kind of how we met. I think you or Trevin introduced yourselves to each other at the Colorado Bowhunters Association banquet. And then we sat next to each other and we were joking all night about the old white men getting all these awards and shit.
Right.
And the thing with hunting in general is like, all right, there's public land and the animals belong to the public and are held in the trust of the state. Resident tags are not that expensive, but there's guys who pay $250,000 for a governor's tag to go hunt a moose or go hunt a sheep or whatever. So there is like that other world of it. And I think that showing people that, yeah, there's a little bit of barrier to entry with knowledge, with equipment, that's becoming less and less with the amount of online information and resources. I have no one in my family who hunts. They don't bird hunt. They don't duck hunt. They don't hunt with guns. They don't hunt with bows and arrows. And so I felt that I had these great mentors. They didn't know who I was, right? But at least the people like the Meat Eater crew or John Dudley are kind of providing this massive platform for people who didn't have that uncle to show them what to do.
Right.
And so I do think that today there's more opportunity for everyone through the shared collective knowledge. But to actually show up, like you're here right now, you paid the $30 for the CBA membership, which you guys can all do at ColoradoBowHunting.org. So I'm want to give you kudos, because it is intimidating, not only when like you internally feel different or you're externally like, I am different from these people, but just to be a new person as an adult in a new space, it's a little bit like, I'm X amount of years old. I'm established in my career. I'm established in my life. Like, I don't need too much newness. I'm good.
Right. To jump in something that's completely foreign in so many ways.
Yeah.
It's come with its challenges. But, you know, I think, you know, as you mentioned, I've got kind of a big personality anyway. Mm-hmm. So that definitely helps. And my innate desire to show up and to do new things, regardless of what's happening around me, has definitely been beneficial.
That's awesome. And at the CBA banquet, you won in the silent
CBA
auction some new arrows. And I was curious, have you gotten out to use your equipment yet?
I have not. This will be actually the first time I've been out since. I've been on a couple turkey hunts with a shotgun since, and have done some traveling. So I've been busy since the banquet.
That's awesome.
This will be the first night out with the new arrows.
Good for you. I trying my best to get out more and more. Like last year, this time last year, so it's 2021 if you're listening at whatever point in the future, but this time last year I didn't have a job, so I could go to the archery range anytime. Nice. I wanted. I could do anything I wanted, and now my archery range is like 7 feet long in my apartment complex, like in my living room. Cool. I've shot a few arrows through the bathroom door, but most of them land on the target, and it's not the same. Like, we'll do a shot tonight that you don't have to do it, but it's like 75 yards. It's a like mountain goat shot. And it's super fun, but you don't get that experience inside, but you get the repetition of your right. form and your technique. And I found it translates.
For the rest of the summer, definitely focusing on getting more range time in.
Yeah.
I'm also very competitive, and so that's nice. I know that it's probably unlikely that I'll get an elk on my first hunt, but, I'm ready to hunt an elk, and I'm going to get an elk.
That's
you know,
awesome.
My mindset going into it, and you know, just very determined. And so, you know, I'm going to put in the work to be able to at least, you know, get a good shot if I do see an elk. But also, you know, getting physically ready as well. You know, working out, running, building up cardiovascular endurance. The hunts that we're going on, you know, seems like it's pretty rugged terrain. The people that I hunt with are yeah. very, you know, off the beaten path hunters. Mm-hmm. So they will find, you know, places up in the mountains that no one else, you know, frequents, mm-hmm. which I really appreciate, but it's also like, I'm not ready to hike a mountain right
yeah.
now.
So. Well, I appreciate that you have that level of understanding and awareness about it, because some people are like, oh, I can shoot this 3D course, lights out, all 12s all day long. It's like, okay, but do you know about elk ecology? Do you know about elk
right,
behavior?
Right.
How are your legs? Can you hike a mountain? Do you know how to start a campfire? All the pieces of it. And I think that's
There's
one part
so
of this
much.
That I'm drawn towards, right? Is it's not only a lifelong pursuit of how much better I can get at archery, but it's how well-rounded all of these pieces are. Okay, now I'm a biologist, I'm an ecologist, I'm
right.
a mountaineer, I'm a camper, I'm all these things. I'm the camp chef, you know?
That's awesome. That's one of the things I love about it as well. I might be kind of type A. I have mm-hmm. kind of a perfectionist personality. So if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it well, and I'm going to make sure that I'm the best at it that I can be. So that means knowing all the different pieces for it and pieces about it and showing up when it counts. And putting in the work.
That's really what it takes. And it also gets you to a level of confidence. Like, again, last year when I wasn't working, I was shooting like 4, 5, 6 days a week. And I got to a point where I was like, oh, yeah, I would take like a 60-yard shot on an animal that was, you know, not moving or not aware that I was there totally. And now I have a new bow. It's at a new draw weight. I have a new release, new arrows. And I'm like, all right, we're back to like 25 yards until I
right.
put in the work.
Right.
On the second episode of the podcast, we were talking with CBA founder Marv Klinke, and he's been shooting a stick bow for like 30 years. And mm-hmm. so we were talking about a little bit of the differences between the compound and traditional archery. And the thing he likes about the traditional archery is like how much closer you have to get to the animals.
Right.
But also the thing that I like about the compound bow is how quickly someone can get into the sport. Because you could buy a bow, and if it's not August, you could probably get into that season of hunting with it. And having people around you that kind of, that you respect their ethical choices, I think is important as well.
Absolutely. Having the right kind of mentors is what I'd call it, whether they're, you know, paid or professional, or whether they're just, you know, other people at the CBA banquet who were helpful enough to, you know, come up and share some of their insight. I've actually gotten several new contacts just from the CBA banquet of people that have reached out. And again, you know, I kind of stand out in a crowd, but everyone was so friendly and willing to come up and share their insight, share their advice, be willing to, you know, go shooting sometime. I mean, like you for this, but also, you know, this Friday I'm meeting with another family that I met at the banquet, and we're going to shoot and hopefully meet the well-known Tom Klum that I feel like everyone mentioned at the banquet.
That's so awesome.
Just that exposure and the willingness of those around also helps, you know, that feeling welcome in a space where I'm clearly inexperienced, where I'm clearly the in the minority in so many ways.
Yeah.
It's been awesome too.
That's an interesting dichotomy that occurs in these hunting spaces, is that hunting does feel like this thing that's a little hush hush, not in the I don't hunt way, but just in the way of like, I'm not telling you where I hunt.
Yes.
So the thing that I do find is like, people will tell you everything except GPS coordinates. You know, they'll tell you what arrows they're using, what arrows they don't like, which archery shop they do and don't like, all these pieces, where various ranges are. So they'll give you like 85 to 90% of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And then you go to CPW and talk to them about the Colorado Hunting Atlas. And, you know, the people who do take you hunting, there's a level of trust there when someone shows you their hunting grounds,
right, right,
that you're not just taking 20 people there the next year.
Absolutely.
And it's an interesting balance, especially coming from New York, which is a state with not a ton of public land, rather, to Colorado, which is one of the states with one of the most public lands and some of the most national forests and national parks and state parks. And we have all of this that every one of us can access. It's not your spot, but you do feel really good when you figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, last year I paid for Corey Jacobson's Elk 101 course. So it was like $100, and he has, you know, 20, 30 chapter modules about elk behavior and different times of the year and the rut and your equipment and the biology of an elk and the vitals, and goes through each thing step by step. And, you know, the thing that's been so frustrating but now just hilarious to me is people are like, how do you find elk? Well, it's like, well, they need water, they need food, they need shelter. And it seems so basic, but, you know, Colorado's got one of the biggest elk herds in the country. I think it's over 250,000.
Wow.
And you're like, man, they got to be somewhere.
Where are they? When I first started this, my friend would give me such a hard time because, again, it's just not being accustomed to it, not growing up with it. I would be outdoors wherever we were, you know, whether we're on a hike or
hold that mic.
When we went out for pheasants or even when we went out for turkey, we would see tracks and he would point out scat and he would point out different signs and he would point out all these things. And I'm constantly asking, well, where are they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much evidence that the wildlife is around, but not having seen it and still not knowing, you know, what I'm supposed to be looking for. It's just been so mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited to actually get out for this hunt, this upcoming hunt.
And it can also feel like everyone already has all the knowledge, because mm-hmm. if you follow certain Instagram accounts, especially if they're like outfitters, they're putting these pictures up of these giant bulls or these huge herds, and I'm like, I'm just trying to find an
just
elk.
One just
any
one.
Size any shape.
Absolutely.
But also one thing I really appreciate is how welcoming Colorado is to the hunting community. So the Colorado State or University of Colorado, one of the two, I think it's Colorado State, puts out the Colorado Hunting Atlas, which is like an interactive mapping software that you can choose the game species and you can choose a winter range, a summer range, their concentration. And so you can start to get a feel for where they're at. And then you overlay that with your hunting units map. And then you overlay that with your Onyx public land, private land boundaries. And the picture starts to get filled in for you. Now it doesn't say, hey, the elk are right here,
right,
you know, on the X. But after I listened to this elk hunting module last year, I started to really do a lot of e-scouting. And so the thing that I was like, okay, well, Colorado, especially last year, was dry as hell. So I was like, they need water. We all need water. I also need some water when we're on this trip. And so that was kind of my starting point. And I found, you know, on satellite image, so who knows when that was taken, a few like places that looked like they were holding water. So then I went and scouted it. And when I went to scout, I saw like really fresh elk poop, and I smelled for the first time ever elk, and I didn't know I was smelling elk, but I texted a friend. I was like, hey, do elk smell like a barnyard? Like, you know, and he was like, yeah, that's the smell. Like, you know, basically piss and hay. And so I was so excited. I was like, okay, they're here. And I didn't see an elk when I was scouting, but I left and I came back for opening day. I pulled into the trailhead. I passed 25 vehicles. There was like a million ATVs buzzing around and all these guys. Part of me was like, well, if they're here, then the animals are probably here.
Right.
But also like, damn it, everybody's here. And that first night I went from the trailhead and I like dropped my camp somewhere off on this piece of BLM land, and then I took like my tripod and my binoculars and I went down into this little basin, and I set up, you know, two-thirds, three-quarters of the way up from the valley floor, and I was just glassing all these ridge lines, and within like half an hour I spotted a bull elk. I was like, holy shit, this just got super real. Like, one, Corey Jacobs was right. Like, they do need water. But two, it turned all of the money I spent, all the time I spent, and all the online looking at maps into like, oh, no, I'm here and this is real.
Yeah.
And it made me a little bit more confident in being able to find that in other locations.
That's awesome.
So I'm excited for you to kind of have that experience, especially because you're going with some people who have an idea.
Right.
And then from there, you kind of get this new level of confidence. And hey, I hope you get an elk this year. But I also found, I was like, I'm doing some solo hunting, and I figure like that for me is a big like life accomplishment. I think human beings got here through hunting and gathering for the past hundreds of thousands of years. And so just to be like, I can do it too. Like, I have a nice car and I sleep in a nice foam mattress bed and I like air conditioning. But if I needed to, I could do the thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's feeling of self-sufficiency that comes from it. Definitely drawn to that as well.
Then I've learned this more through my spearfishing adventures, but also through hunting, is when you harvest the meat yourself, you really care about it. You're like, I spent all that time and money and effort going to get it out of the woods and keep it cold. So then you're like, I want to look up an awesome recipe to make this with. I think a lot of the complaints about game meat is because the field care of the meat wasn't proper, but also the preparation of it wasn't proper. We're super used to really fatty American beef, and wild red meat is super lean. So you have to cook them differently, or else you're going to just create this like dry, hard, chewy piece of whatever. And one resource I really like is a guy named Hank Shaw. He's a wild game chef, and one of his books is called Buck Buck Moose. And there's amazing recipes in there, and he also has free recipes online. But I found, I was like, to give maximum respect to the animals that I've taken, let me really prepare it and like go to the store and buy these weird ingredients I've never purchased before. But the end result wasn't just a delicious meal. It was a delicious meal with me remembering like the time and the effort and the all the pieces of the puzzle.
I love that.
So
I
you're not just taking a bite of steak. You're taking like a bite of a memory of your life.
Right. Absolutely. The steak that I harvested, that I, you know, got and went through the work. Absolutely. Definitely looking forward to that part of it as well. And I think one of the things that draws me to, you know, hunting and other outdoor adventures anyway, like there, it's so much more than just one thing, you know, it's so much more than a hike in the woods. It's so much more than using an arrow to, you know, to kill something. It's so much more than using a shotgun, you know, it's the whole experience that makes it worthwhile. So
there's a well-roundedness to it that I didn't really fully comprehend until I got actually involved with it. But one thing that's interesting to see is that my friends, so I have this like yoga life, a lot of my friends are vegans, but as I start to explain to them like the North American model of wildlife conservation, also as like how much I care about my food and try to respect my food and all of that, they start to kind of come around a little bit and be like, oh, you're not just Elmer Fudd like stomping through the woods killing rabbits. So it's an interesting part of it that I don't think your average Joe just even really thinks about.
I understand, right.
And the other thing is that like hunting and hunters is such a broad topic. I was in North Carolina when I first got into bow hunting and visiting a friend who had moved down there, and there were guys who were running dogs to chase deer and basically do like a drive or a push, and they were we may need to create a parking spot for somebody.
Yeah.
But we'll let them deal with that when we need to.
Okay.
And so I was really turned off by like middle of the day. It's a beautiful day. These dogs are like yipping in the woods, and these rednecks are sitting in the back of their trucks with a gun in the hand, like waiting for a scared ass deer to run out of its bed and then shoot it while on the move. And I really just, it did not sit well with me. Yeah, we can let this person park. All right, sorry to finish the thought, is I was very turned off by it. I was like, this doesn't feel like fair chase. This doesn't feel sporting. This doesn't feel like you're doing any effort. Like, you're just sending a dog into the bush and a deer comes running out and you shoot the damn thing from the back of your truck. And it took me a few weeks of like contemplation and consideration to be like, it's a valid form of doing what they're doing. Do I completely feel comfortable with it? Is it something that I would do? Those are different questions. But just the fact that like man and dog kind of co-evolved, because men use dogs for all the purposes, shepherding sheep or pointing, flushing out pheasants or whatever it might be. So kind of realizing this, like, hey man, these people's families have been doing this for grandpa, great grandpa, great great grandpa, right. And my like New York Yankee attitude can't just come in and be like, that's wrong, that makes me uncomfortable, let's not do that. And so I've also found that exploring the world of hunting has kind of made me a little bit less bias and a little bit more open-minded to like, let me consider all of this before I do a snap judgment on like your character and who you are.
Right.
And then the thing that's tough for hunters right now, I think, is like hunters at large, we need to be on the same team in general so that we can keep
all benefit, right?
The seasons, the animals, the access. One topic that just came up on a recent Meat Eater episode is that there is a proposal in Alaska to stop all hunting of caribou in two major units unless you are a subsistence living person in a subsistence community. And it doesn't have to do with financial ability. It just has to do with like where you live and your proximity to like a grocery store or a major town. And there's a potential for it to actually pass. And I'm like, I want to one day go up and hunt a caribou. And so that idea of like, I need to care about something that is thousands of miles away that I've never seen, people I've never met, is an interesting proposition. Because here in Colorado, we have so much of this stuff coming up, whether it's the archery seasons or there's no spring bear season or the reintroduction of wolves. And so there's a part of me that's like, I'm team hunter. And then outside of the public eye within hunters, I'm like, I don't like guys who hunt with dogs or whatever my opinion is. That's not exactly my opinion, but just the idea of like, I'm going to let us all try to be together on this community because I want us to like have voting power.
Right.
But within the community, it's like we can have our conversations about, you know, are crossbows ethical or should you be using this size caliber bullet for hunting elk versus hunting deer? Like, it's tricky. It's a tricky balance.
But I think that's, I mean, that's human nature. That's life in every, you know, almost every situation that you find yourself in. You know, there are things in our, you know, communities or groups, whatever our groups are, whether they're, you know, hunting, whether, I mean, I'm a nurse, whether it's, you know, within the nursing world or whether it's healthcare at large, there are going to be things where, okay, we need to work together to accomplish a greater goal, but we can still, there still might be things that affect us specifically that we need to discuss and figure out amongst ourselves. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think one of the good things about me being so new is that I don't know what's right or what's wrong. So it's been very interesting to me to hear and see all of the different perspectives. As I've said, I've partnered with two brothers who grew up hunting for years.
Right.
And even between them, the way that they hunt is completely different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and then being at the CBA banquet and talking to all the different faces there, I went into it, you know, kind of thinking this is, you know, a bunch of old white men and, you know, here I am and what am I going to find? And there was a whole, I was very impressed with the whole variety of not only people that were there. There were young people, there were old people, there were a couple, you know, kids and families with, you know, their kids had bows as well. But there was so much more. There was the lobbyists there and we talked about the legislative affairs. There were, you know, the educators there, there's the traditional bow, there's the crossbow, there's the compound bow. Like there's so many specifics that, like I said, being new, I don't know what's right or what's wrong. So it's just been awesome to learn it all and to hear it all from different perspectives.
Yeah.
I am not afraid to ask the same question to five different people because I have no doubt I will get five different responses.
Yeah.
And then I need to use that information to figure out what's going to be best for me and my experience.
Well, I think that's so mature of you and so important for anybody listening to just be like, just because someone is doing something, especially if they're doing it confidently, doesn't mean it's right, doesn't mean it's wrong, but it does mean develop your own opinion.
There's
on
a different
it.
Way to do it. Yeah.
And there are things that are a little bit more touchy than others, right? Like some people who, hunter harassment is a thing, right? We're all on public land. You can get intimidated by other people, especially like
we have guns and weapons and all this stuff. So it's interesting where if it's a non-hunter, it's like, hey, I just want you to know it's illegal for you to like harass me in this moment. There's laws against this. But hunters themselves are, I've been hunting this place for 20 years. It's like, I don't care. It's been public land for 20 years. I'm here now too. Hi, my name is Jake. And right. So it's an interesting journey to go through developing an opinion. And it's really mindful of you to be like, I kind of don't have an opinion on this yet. Let me hear about it. Let me research it. I find that I can be very impressionable, if that's the right word. Like a charismatic spokesman could really like sway my opinion in a minute. Okay. I'll buy GME stock or something stupid because I'm like, oh, it's going up. Everything's going up. Got to get it. And I've gotten a little bit better now of being like, that's one person's point of view, whether they have a million followers or zero followers or a platform or not. And then kind of being like, let me have an experience with it. Because I think for me, coming from New York City, it's really easy to like be in a liberal bubble with a liberal mm-hmm. mindset versus like, well, I want to go experience that and then I'll develop an opinion on it.
Right.
So that's huge.
Yeah. And I feel like so many of my experiences have been where I'm the odd man out for whatever reason, or you know, just ill-informed, uninformed in so many ways. So it's just kind of my nature to sit back and see what's what before jumping to any conclusion, before, you know, making any rash decision or anything, mostly because, you know, like I said, I'm kind of type A and a perfectionist anyway. I don't want to sound like a dumbass in anything. So
yeah.
So I'm okay sitting back, asking questions, seeing what's what, learning,
yeah.
learning, and learning from valid sources, but also getting, you know, the individual perspectives and opinions, because those are so important as well. I know the brothers I have been hunting with and learning from have very different perspectives and do things very differently from the way that, you know, other people hunt.
Right.
And I'm finding that out now as I branch out more from their awesome experience, which is amazing, by the way. But, you know, like hunts that I'll go on with them are not going to be the hunts that I go on with, you know, some of the dads that live on the courtyard who
sure.
are used to city life. So.
Yeah.
But both are going to be very valuable, you know, learning experiences for me. And I'm sure we'll see elk or what other animal we're hunting in each of those experiences. So why limit yourself is how I look at things.
100%. And I think that there's kind of room for all of it. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to poo-poo people who feed use feeders to hunt off of or use food plots. Or it's like, I just want to go have those experiences. And you could say, yeah, it's not for me, or I don't want to do it. Or hell yeah, that's great. What the hell am I doing climbing 14,000 feet mountains when I can sit in a tree stand all day?
You know, I feel like that might be coming, but we'll see.
Well, I think that's awesome. I feel like we could keep talking for a while, but I'm starting to see some people head over to this archery course.
Yeah, it's time.
So maybe this will be a short one. And I think what would be really cool is if I get you back on here in like 6 or 7 months after
okay.
your season, after
yeah.
you've kind of gone through it and see how your feelings have evolved.
I think that sounds great. I would totally do it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, Carmen. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Jake.